You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the AI Premier League Preview Pod. It's Chelsea week, with the undefeated Reds taking on Mauricio Sarri's side twice in the matter of just 4 days. So on tonight's pod, we'll be discussing the Reds' best start to a season ever and looking ahead to the weekend's game at Stamford Bridge. Joining me to discuss the game, I'm delighted to welcome on AI writer Sam Evans and Chelsea fan and co-host of the Did It Cross the Line pod, Rebecca Watkins. Welcome, guys.
Hi.
Oh, good to speak to you, Rebecca. There's plenty about Chelsea that we want to discuss this season. Huge amounts of change, of course. It seems like every time I get you on, actually, there's sort of turbulent times to speak about things in the past. I know you've definitely got your own thoughts on the club's structure and strategy, should we say. But before we get started on to this season, really what I wanted to ask you, I'm asking all sorts of all rival fans when they come on the pod, really, at this stage of the season, what you made of the way in which the club ended the last campaign. Of course, there was plenty going on, which was a Conte's, you know, rumours over his future, clear discontent there, the FA Cup final, of course, and then sort of the sort of rumours around the financial situation of the club and Abramovich's ownership of the club. So plenty to cover, I guess. But what were your overall thoughts on how Chelsea ended last season?
Yeah, I think, look, we're kind of well known for, especially, you know, under the Abramovich era, of having sort of dead men walking in jobs. We all knew when Ancelotti, case in point, was going to get sacked at the end of the season. But I think with Conte, it was probably one of the most damaging ends to a managerial reign that we've seen, for several reasons. Obviously, in terms of the way it went on for so, so long, we did look incompetent at one stage, because it was clear Conte was getting sacked, but it was halfway through the transfer window. And why were we not kind of doing anything? Why are we even looking at players if we don't have a new manager? There was obviously all the kind of debacle with Sarri getting out of his Napoli deal as well, which is still sort of being mentioned in the Italian press and stuff. And Napoli are obviously very unhappy with the way that went down. But in terms of how obviously Conte was sort of, I guess, so unhappy at the club for so long and wouldn't walk away because he wanted his kind of severance package, and maybe he did just want to kind of see it out. I'm not even sure on that. But what he did to some of the players as well, I think it was very, very damaging. You saw an entire kind of clique of Brazilians alienated, and that doesn't just hark back to his kind of final season, that goes back to even when he had issues with Diego Costa in the title winning season, and, you know, there were rumors over their relationship then. So I think that there were a lot of things that went wrong that season. Some were Conte's fault, absolutely. Some were not, because, you know, it's like in general life, you don't even have to be a football fan to understand this. In any job or in any situation, if the same thing keeps happening to you over and over and over again, you eventually have to look in the mirror and think, am I the problem? Is this me? Am I doing something wrong? And the way Chelsea just go through managers, yes, they are the problem.
No, exactly. I think one thing that sort of struck me about the way in which the Conte sort of situation unfolded was, really, there seemed to be a lot more animosity towards him than you'd usually associate. Obviously, you mentioned there's that the dead men walking sort of scenario that you've been in a few times with the managers that have been at the club. But this time it really did feel like there was a number of sort of personal grudges held against him. You mentioned the Brazilian sort of contingent in the squad who clearly were not his biggest fans. Willian, of course, that famous sort of Instagram photoshop that he did after winning the FA Cup. Remarkable stuff, really. Just on Conte then, I mean, you mentioned that, yeah, of course, there's bigger problems going on, and if it keeps happening over and over again, maybe stop pointing all the fingers at the manager. But just where did that sort of animosity emerge from between him and the Brazilian contingent in the squad? You mentioned the Costa situation that he had, but you know, tactically, surely there are no questions about the effectiveness of his approach. There might be some questions about how dull it can be at times, but I just wonder where you think things began to sour.
I mean, look, the kind of dull approach doesn't really wash with me. I couldn't care less. You know, if there was a Mourinho fan club, I would be first and centre at it. So I really don't care about, you know, people saying, oh, the football's boring, all this. If you're getting results and if it's clinical, that's great. If you're defending well, again, that's great. I love to watch stuff like that. So I was never really bothered with that. And I think Chelsea fans as a whole are pragmatic enough in the respect that they're more concerned about results. And that, for me, is by the by and fine. If Abramovich wants one thing, then, and he clearly does, he needs to get a manager that can bring that. And I think finally with Sarri, he might have it. He semi had it with Ancelotti. But in terms of when that started, I think there are a few different schools of thought on that. It definitely started with the board the summer after we won the title. There's no questions about that. There were even rumours in the winter, you know, of us en route to winning the title, Conte basically saying, this squad isn't big enough, this squad isn't good enough. If we're playing on multiple fronts, which we're obviously going to be back in the Champions League, because we are literally about to win the title, you know, if we're doing all this stuff, then we need a bigger squad, we need a better squad. That didn't happen. He didn't get the players he wanted. The summer was very much the same. So Conte and the board, and by extension Abramovich, I think were fractured for a very long time. Conte and the players, people like Hazard and Courtois, always made it very clear that they didn't really like the football he was playing. Hazard is saying that an awful lot more now. Now, when it comes to the Brazilian clique, I'm a very big advocate of it. Sometimes it's not necessarily what you do, it's how you do it. And with the Diego Costa thing, okay, fine, fair enough. Whether you think Costa should have been kept on a purely playing level, which in my opinion, of course he should, you know, if the player wanted to leave, if Conte saw a different person, a different character coming in, you know, absolutely fine. He is the manager. He lives and dies by those decisions. And if they're not good enough, he ultimately gets sacked. The problem was the way he went about it. You cannot just send a very popular member of the dressing room. And also, let's not forget, I know they're footballers on X, Y, and Z a week, but they're still human beings. They're still 23, 24, 25, 26-year-old human beings. And it hurts when somebody, you think you've done a good job last season at your job, and somebody just sends you a text, a literal text message, when you all are on holiday saying, thanks for last year, but don't really need you again. You know, that's essentially what Conte did. And of course, Costa was upset. Then he went to his friends and said, as you would, as I would, as anybody in a job would, if you got a text from your manager tomorrow morning saying, thanks for all your hard work, but we don't need you anymore, I'm going in a different direction, you would think, wow, the least they could do was say it to my face. And then you go to your friends, you go to your colleagues and you say, oh my God. And people start thinking, if that happened to him, that could happen to me. And you also think, that's my friend. I don't appreciate the way they've been treated there, because I certainly would think that. And David Luiz thought that. William thought that. Costa's other friends thought that. And frankly, you don't even have to be friends with somebody to think, where is your respect? Where is your man management? All we hear about in football these days is, can somebody man manage? You know, questions now about Mourinho. Is Mourinho able to man manage this generation of players? The generation that didn't grow up, you know, cleaning people's boots in the dressing room. The generation that grew up at 16 thinking, my first car is going to be a Lamborghini. It's not the same mentality. But, you know, at the end of the day, Conte did that very badly wrong, then dug his heels in and refused to apologise. That, I think, made it a lot worse. And, it has come out that he clearly has an issue with Brazilian players, whether it is just the clique at Chelsea that, you know, did rally around Costa. But even going on to like him tactically and stuff, we obviously switched to the three at the back when it looked so kind of disastrous when Chelsea were playing the four at the back. And David Luiz profited massively from that. He was one of the key players in Conte's system when it became successful. Because love him or love him as a defender, he is very good on the ball. And in a three at the back, I do think he is better suited than in a four at the back, especially when you've got somebody like N'Golo Kante in front of you. And, you know, at that point, Matic as well. The issue then becomes when now, obviously, at three at the back, David Luiz is getting dropped and David Luiz is out the team and David Luiz is being, you know, tweeted in the press as somebody that doesn't train hard enough. And from everything you read about David Luiz, he is not one of those players. You know, you get some players who turn up to training and just phone it in, but then they're, you know, fabulous on a weekend, et cetera, et cetera. I do not think David Luiz is one of those players. And to say that about a player fully calls into question their professionalism, which is what Conte did. Again, making the relations between the players even worse. And it just went on like that throughout the season. You know, he essentially refused to play Willian at times when Willian should have been played. Cesc Fabregas, another player who clearly had, you know, a fairly poor relationship with Conte. And I get that you're not always going to love your manager. That's the same in every walk of life. But you can certainly manage a team and have players still kept on side, even if you don't fancy them or you don't kind of see them as integral to your plans. And you're never going to win a title and you're never going to win any trophies with just 11 players. And Conte couldn't even keep 11 of them happy by the end. Mm. So I think there was a breakdown in kind of every level, including the supporters, because let's not forget the majority of the Chelsea fans at the game against Man United when it was 4-0 and Mourinho was so hurt and so annoyed and so disgusted at the way Conte celebrated that fourth goal. I personally felt it was disrespect at its absolute height, but mob mentality, football fans, et cetera, et cetera. You know, Mourinho then became a Judas and this huge relationship problem between Mourinho and Conte emerged. War of words, you know, Mourinho is a little man. Conte's a match fixer who has no hair. You know, it became very childish, very pathetic. And it also seemed to kind of destroy Conte, whereas Mourinho is very like, I've done this 10 times over. I'll do it 10 times again. I live off this. But Conte also, you know, at that point when that started, had the full backing of the fans. He was basically a darling. He just won the title. You know, he was making us look really, really good, et cetera, et cetera. Then everything emerged with him not being, I would say, difficult with the board, but there was that. Then there was a problem with the players. Nobody agreed with what happened to Diego Costa. It was downright stupid the way that was done. You know, we could have kept him till January. He didn't even get to play till January because Atleti were on a transfer registering ban anyway. Could have bedded in Morata. Things could have gone very, very differently there because a lot of Morata's problem is mental. So that could have been a hugely different situation. By the end, the fans hated Conte. They wanted him out as vehemently as I've ever seen them want any Chelsea manager out. So there was a breakdown on every possible level. And I think that more than anything was a bit of a hangover in the summer, which I think Sarri, to his credit, has actually done really well to not dwell on, if you like.
Absolutely. I mean, it sounds like there's huge, huge amounts of baggage there. In terms of if you equate it to a relationship, I mean, that's one that you're very keen to get out of and sort of cut all ties from as soon as possible, I'm sure. I want to move on to sort of the transfer window then, because I think it sort of ties in with another on-running theme with the club, in that there seem to be questions around you know, the financial commitment that's still there from perhaps the owner to the club, to the project going forward. I know there are questions around the stadium project at one stage. Those seem to be back on track now. But people start to identify, whether it be through a lack of strategy. I know Marco Amendola obviously left as well. The transfer strategy, the players that you were bringing in as opposed to, you know, the players that you were sort of used to targeting in years gone by, it seemed to have changed in terms of the quality of the players that you were looking at, or really the tier, I guess, whether it be to do with wages, whatever the reason might be. But this summer, I just wonder what your thoughts were on the transfer window. Obviously, with Courtois, his departure seemed more or less inevitable, given the noises he was making for a long time. And but there were rumours about Hazard and Kante, and of course you kept hold of them both. But with the signings that came in terms of the overpaying for Kepa, of course, after sort of losing out on Alisson, Kovacic, obviously a late loan signing coming in, very talented guy, of course, as well. Jorginho, the one who's obviously foundational to Sarri's plans going forward at Chelsea. But did the transfer window sort of, was it indicative of that this sort of lack of forward planning that sort of tied in with Sarri arriving so late as well?
So I think that is an interesting question. I think there are a number of levels to it, as there so often are. You know, I think it was a strange transfer window for 90% of clubs, actually, in the one, it's a World Cup year. So, of course, unless you're doing what Liverpool did, which is everything you would advocate of a board, you identify players, you go out, you get them in early, done. Fine, great, you know, standing ovation. I don't think that happened for a lot of clubs. I also think, because of obviously the comments that Cristiano Ronaldo and Gareth Bale made after the Champions League final, and also Neymar's attitude at PSG last season, not to mention FFP and Mbappe, a lot of clubs were waiting for the big move to happen to kickstart a bunch of other stuff. That didn't happen. So I think a few people were left flat-footed on that, actually, because I was sort of waiting for, obviously, Ronaldo went to Juve, but then you're thinking, right, well, who are Real Madrid replacing him with? You know, are they going to go out and get Neymar? Are then PSG going to go move for somebody? Or is Mbappe going to leave? Will Dembele even leave Barcelona after what they did with, you know, Malcolm? So it was one of those where I thought so much could happen. And in reality, very little did. The reason that would have obviously affected Chelsea would have been with Eden Hazard. Obviously, that didn't happen. And again, I think now with Hazard's new contract, which absolutely will happen. The problem for Hazard is he's not good enough. People don't want him anymore. He isn't as good as you think, you know, somebody like Mbappe looks now. Is he arguably even as kind of credible as Salah after last season? So I think Hazard has no choice but to sign a new deal. He knows that. We know that. It's all going to be fine. Unless Real Madrid have a disastrous next 3 months and have to go and break the bank for him because they can't get anybody else. But in terms of Courtois, I would have sold him in 2016. Him and Hazard basically made such an issue and essentially got the board to get rid of Mourinho when anybody with half a brain knew that they were going to be leaving at some point anyway because they saw themselves as bigger than the club. Courtois always has and always will, which is ironic because after his performance against Barcelona last year, if I was Real Madrid, I would have been looking elsewhere. But yes, we did overpay for Kepa, but at the end of the day, there were very few options out there. I personally am of the opinion that Alisson was never an option. I think he was nailed on to go to Liverpool, and it is right. Such a sad state of affairs for Chelsea that if I was a player who wasn't a Chelsea fan, if I was just a great player at, I don't know, Roma, and I had two choices in the summer just gone, Chelsea or Liverpool, I wouldn't even blink before I went and signed a contract at Anfield because you have a manager who is a great manager who has a track record of winning things, which I think people have forgot. Klopp has actually won a Bundesliga, you know, and did so, so well with BVB. He is clearly a great man. He's clearly a modern manager, a good manager. That is a good squad. That is a harmonized squad. The board know what they're doing. The owners understand the situation now, which I don't think they did when they initially came in. And you look like a team that aren't, you know, fine this year, title contenders, probably title winners, who knows. But you don't look like a team who are going to capitulate and not be in the top four every other year for the next 10 years with a new, you know, manager every 3 years. You look at Chelsea and you think, I don't know what the owner wants to do anymore. Why are they looking at second tier players? Are they even getting a new stadium? What's going on with Abramovich's visa issues? What's going on with the board? Who's even been appointed to replace the man that we thought was in charge of all this stuff? You know, they don't treat their club legends very well because you look at the farewell certain players have got and it's been abysmal. They didn't give proper extended contracts to people like Lampard and Ashley Cole, which they should, and that could have solved a lot of things. Then you look at the young players. Young players never come through. You've got absolutely no chance whatsoever. You can have the best preseason of your life, like Hudson-Odoi did, and then basically be persona non grata, you know, in the subsequent weeks. It's absolutely ridiculous. If you're an established player, I would not risk myself on Chelsea, which is, you know, essentially why Jan Oblak, absolutely no chance. Why would you leave Atleti for Chelsea? Which, you know, 3-4 years ago, I would have laughed in somebody's face if they'd have said, oh, Alisson picked Liverpool over Chelsea. I'd have been like, well, he didn't. That's, he wouldn't have. It's not a thing. But the level of players now that we're looking at as well, I think it's partly indicative of the owner and what he will now plow into the club. Yes. It's also, you know, you have to realize we have spent two of the last three seasons outside of the Champions League. That's revenue that we are not getting anymore. And gone are the days where, you know, Abramovich is willing or able to pour in hundreds and hundreds of millions on stuff. How can you have a coherent structure when your manager and your managerial style changes every 3 or 4 years? You know, so either we need to take the plunge and go completely continental, in that, I mean, the board and the kind of director of football, whoever that may be, if we brought one in, pick the players, pick, you know, not the system or who plays every week, but the essential ethos of what the club are going to be. And then the manager is more like Mourinho said, it's a continental approach. You're a head coach. You're not necessarily, you have preferred targets, but you can work with what you're given. Or you say every manager gets exactly what they want or as close to it as we can give them. Because there's no point doing what we did to Conte. Because even if everything else would have been perfect, that is a recipe for disaster. Because you are asking a manager to play with players he literally didn't want and who can't fit into a certain system. And it's never going to work.
Never
and
works.
Arguably it's a big issue at the moment, and it's quite concerning. And I think it's the first time people have picked up on it after the West Ham game. I've said it all season, and the midfield just terrifies me at times. And what's happening to Kante terrifies me. The prospect of Marcus Alonso and David Luiz having to defend when Hazard is absolved of every bit of defensive responsibility terrifies me.
No wonder he's delighted right now, Hazard. I mean, that's what he's wanted for. Since he's joined the club, practically, isn't it? Having no defensive responsibility.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, you know, not to be on a rant about Hazard, because I'm not his biggest fan. Obviously, he's a very, very good player. Only an idiot would say he isn't. He has bags and bags of talent. What I would say is you can look across Europe and even the Premier League. You look at Salah, you look at Mane. You look at even somebody like a De Bruyne or a David Silva, Mbappe, Griezmann, anybody, Gareth Bale even, they have some defensive responsibility. Fine if you're playing the equivalent of Cardiff at home. You don't have to do that much, do you? Anybody knows that. But when you're playing a team like a Liverpool or a City or a PSG or anybody, you cannot be carrying passengers. There is one exception to that, one exception. And even Mourinho did it at Real Madrid. The exception is when you have a goat. When you have somebody who can break down any defence, if they just stand resolute, if they're just a bog-standard, well-organised team who other sides will draw 0-0 to, and it'll be like a West Ham or it'll be like a Wolves, or they're a cracking team and you're probably going to concede a goal, but it doesn't matter, because if you concede one, Ronaldo or Messi will score 2 or 3 or 4. But Hazard cannot do that. He has never done that. Sorry saying he's going to score 35 goals a season. Well, I'd be playing him in the Europa League, not resting him, because he is never hitting those heights just playing Premier League games. Because as we saw against West Ham, case in point, he can be man-marked out of a game. Yes, he has games where he's unplayable, but he can be man-marked out. And then you look at the Chelsea midfield, and it's basically every shade of red you can imagine. It's just the same thing, but slightly different. We need a different type of thing. We need a different colour. We need a blue. We need somebody like a Ross Barkley or a Loftus-Cheek, just to pull players we actually have, who can drive you forward a little bit more and who can give you something. Right now, we're asking N'Golo Kante to be a blue, and he's a red. And it just isn't going to work. And he's always going to be exposed and not quite as good as he should be, because everything has to go through Jorginho, and he is the main man now.
Yeah, I think that sort of brings us on nicely then to sort of my next part. I think we probably covered at length there all the baggage that existed at the club, and I think that some of it's not going anywhere, some of it is obviously, but in terms of Maurizio Sarri and his appointment and his responsibility, I'm sure you will have been aware of sort of his own sort of Sarri ball style, and it's going to be definitely be refreshing to a number of the players. We've already talked about Hazard there, but of course it does require certain cogs to actually work. And I think, as you mentioned there with Kante and the way in which his position shifted this season and just how integral Jorginho is to the style, there are going to be issues with it. So just generally, I want to ask you what you've made of Sarri since his appointment, And you know, given what you know about his style of play, are you surprised by how well you've done so far to get results at the start of the season? Or do you think it was just a case of individual brilliance, you know, Hazard scoring goals here and there, moments that's covering up for what you seem to be alluding to there, that is that, you know, there is an underlying tactical issue here because you don't have the right players to really employ the style that he's after?
I obviously think he's done well, because I think it's a bit of a juxtaposition, but you're obviously stupid if you're saying he hasn't done well, because, you know, we've won all but one of our opening games. But when you look a little bit deeper and you look at who those games have been against, you know, that winning against people like Huddersfield and people like Cardiff isn't something I would be writing home about and thinking, oh my God, you know, this is our season to really show everybody what we can do, because they are bog standard results. That if it's not even if you want to get in the top four, you're winning those games. If you want to be in the top half of the table, you're winning those games. So I don't even think that's, you know, anything you could read into. You look at the Arsenal game. One, I am so pleased that we can finally beat Arsenal again, because under Conte, it was one of the banes of my life. I usually expect a solid 3 points,
Yeah, exactly.
But it is. So many years, I used to love Arsenal. Under Conte, it was like a genuine hatred, because I think we're not going to win. I'm going to be annoyed and upset here. It's so frustrating. But, you know, the Arsenal game, yes, we won. Yay. But any time that defence was not even exposed, just asked to do the bare minimum, it fell apart. That was not a good kind of masterclass. And you might take 3 points from it, absolutely, but I wouldn't be watching that performance back, and I have several times, and thought, oh, yay, this is great. I thought, oh, my God, this is everything I said and more.
There was space all over the place. I remember that.
Oh my God, there's no words. It's like watching an under-10s team, you know, and they all just follow the ball and they all just run. And it's like, oh my God, positions, people. But, you know, the other problem was exposed against West Ham. And it's what I said about the midfield. You know, we basically are in a situation, and I think we need to just accept it, because it's just easier. Because why Batshuayi's been allowed to go again, I don't know, but that's another problem for another day. The fact is, you know, we have two forwards, one in Morata, who isn't going to score, and the other one in Giroud, who I like very much, and I think he is a good striker. But he's never going to get you 30 goals a season. Giroud is at his best, really, when he's allowing other people to play. And we saw that in the World Cup, and it's very much what Benzema did for years for Real Madrid, and, you know, got so much stick for it because people don't understand why you're not scoring 30 goals. That system, that type of striker works perfectly if the rest of your team are pitching in with goals. The problem is with Chelsea in that midfield. Okay, fine, Kante and Jorginho might score against Huddersfield. Are they going to score against Premier League side who just set up well and just don't let you through them? No, they're not. And that is a big problem, because then Hazard is also man-marked, because if a team is going to shut us up in the midfield, they're probably going to man-mark Hazard, or at least mark him out of the game. Again, same thing happened. So where are these goals coming from? And that would be my kind of very big concern with this system, because again, as you say, this isn't the right type of players. And yet, all well and good at Napoli, you know, Sarri adapted people to do that and to fit, but it's not working with us. I don't think have those players, because they're either on loan or we just literally don't have them. And again, I think Batshuayi could have done a job here, but we don't even have that option.
No, yeah, it was odd to see him sort of depart again as well. When you look at him and you look at his strengths, you would have thought that he would have been the right sort of guy to step into that system. I mean, I guess then moving on to the weekend's game then, and based on what you've told me there about the system and its strengths, its weaknesses, things like that. Given that it is, you know, it's largely a possession-based style, obviously there's pressing in it as well, but you are committed to it. And as you said there, everything does go through Jorginho at the moment. You know, you brought Luiz back in to be a ball-playing centre-back, etc. Given what you know about how we play football, basically, and how essentially we love possession sides, basically, especially ones that don't want to play Kante in midfield. I want to play Kante maybe in a forward position instead. So, as you mentioned, leaving your centre backs without the protection that he usually offers. I mean, do you see Sarri switching anything around for this weekend's game based upon that, or do you think he'll stick to his principles and how he's used players as he has so far this season?
I think he'll stick to it. I think he'll stick to it for the entire season, because if you look at what he did at Napoli, fair enough, he basically converted Mertens to a centre forward, and my God, that worked. But at Chelsea, that we don't really have that option. The difference is he very rarely rotated at Napoli. He essentially drove them into the ground. And I think, again, that may well happen with us. We even saw in the Europa League there were so few changes. And I was so surprised, because I understand, you know, we see it all the time with foreign managers. They take the Emery's doing it at Arsenal. They really take the Europa League so, so seriously. And they think it's a genuine, real trophy to win. And fair enough, if you're Arsenal, I mean, a preseason trophy is a real trophy. But should we really be looking at the Europa League? I'm not so sure, but there we are. And I think Sarri's just going to stick with those players, that system, over and over again. And with, you know, Liverpool of last season, I would have thought we might have some joy here, especially when we attack you, especially if we can get, you know, an Hazard or somebody to have a good day. But the Liverpool of this season, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's interesting that, because obviously it would appear, if he was going to stick to those style, that he'd be playing right into our hands, essentially, based upon how we play. Although Hazard has started the season on fire, albeit marked out of that game against West Ham. And he's somebody who I always sort of dread playing against, to be honest, because he's had a few wonderful games against us individually. Just then, so your general thoughts then on Liverpool. I'm trying to ask everybody who comes onto the pod just for their sort of thoughts on the outside in as to what you thought of the business and think of our chances this season, because it's interesting to get everybody's perspective on it. I mean, from what you said there, then do you think this is probably the most complete one, the complete version of us that we've seen for a few years at least?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I was reading the other day David Moyes' comments, which, you know, this is, let's not forget, the man that also said he was one forward away. Yeah, a striker away from winning the league. And I mean, look, I'm the winning lottery ticket away from winning the Euro Millions. It doesn't mean I'm going to win it. It's absolutely, you know, the man's a moron. But he said, you know, I don't actually think this Liverpool team is going to win the league. I don't think they're very good. I don't think they're as good as teams gone by. By which he then elaborated, because as if he hadn't dug a hole big enough, he then spoke about midfields gone by. So, you know, your Gerrard, your Mascherano, your Xabi Alonso, and then, you know, obviously how you had the SAS. The problem with that, David, is yes, they are individuals that you can, and arguably, I don't even know if I would, to be honest, but, you know, fine. Say you're going to pick out Luis Suarez at his prime and say, yeah, okay, fine. He's going to get you more goals than Firmino. Doubtfully. I don't really agree with that, but there we are. Even if we're going to say that, okay, fine. So let's take that year. Couldn't defend for Toffee. Let's take the Gerrard year. You know, any year of any of your other sides, there have been gaping holes. This season, there are no holes. Like, I'm like looking with my binoculars trying to find some flaw, and there really isn't one. The goalkeeper is as solid and as good and as confident as they come. And the mental aspect of the game these days, especially with social media and, you know, the actual media and clickbait, it's so, so important. It's as important as being a good keeper. And well, I'm now of the opinion of we'll never know what Karius could have been, because I think he's been destroyed. Yeah, sure. Absolutely destroyed. Whereas Alisson, after he, you know, made his boo-boo, was very just like, oops, sorry, won't do that again, moving on. And that's the attitude you've got to have. You know, you cannot be, and I hate the expression, you cannot be thin-skinned. You can absolutely have feelings, but you have to have such an innate confidence in yourself, you know? And I think, and I worry about Kepa for that, actually. But then you look at your defence and, you know, Gomez has emerged this season and he looked like he could be, I think, on the couple of occasions last season when he got the chance. Mm. But he's a great centre-back next to Van Dijk. Matip looks better next to Van Dijk. Lovren looks better next to Van Dijk. But you've got four quality centre-backs. You can't have four Van Dijks because two aren't going to sit on your bench for 90% of a season. That's not real. That's not realistic. But you can definitely have one absolutely top-class one and three very good ones. And I think that's what you have. Obviously, your fullbacks are yeah, I'm not a Liverpool fan. If I was, I'd be so overjoyed to see, you know, young players doing so well and so good at going forward and so good at the back and actually able to cross a ball in. And I think it's just great. Your midfield.
It'll never catch on, will it, young players? It'll never catch on.
Not with us. But half the problem last season, you know, with Liverpool and their Champions League run, and I think you would have got second if not for it, was because you didn't have the strength and depth in midfield. And you're asking too much of certain players, especially with the intensity and the pressing that Klopp uses. But this season, you've got so many options. We've seen it already. And there is that genuine question of if Fekir was actually, you know, bought in the summer, how much would he have even played up to this point, you know? Or would we have even seen Wijnaldum do as well as he's done? And it's so on our forward line doesn't even need to be discussed, does it? But the fact that you can, you know, bring on Sturridge or play Sturridge for 60 minutes and Solanke isn't even getting a look in. If I had that squad, I would be so excited and so happy. And I really don't like it, and I don't get when people are, you know, essentially trolling the fans for thinking, I mean, it's our year, haha, we've all joked about it, I joke about it all the time, but for genuinely getting, you know, really bitter about a bit of joy. I mean, my God, the world is so doom and gloom. We've got a Trump administration in America. We've got whatever on earth they call it in England. And, you know, the disaster of Brexit. If you can find some joy, take it. And if I could find some joy in my team playing excellent football and looking like they can go pretty far in all the competitions and probably win a title, I will be dancing from the rooftops. I don't understand why, you know, people are like, oh, they shouldn't be so excited. Most of them are just Man City fans, but I'm surprised they've even got over the bus incident, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, seem really upset about this, actually. It's been quite interesting. I remember over the years people sort of, you know, trying to invent rivalries with us every now and then. But yeah, the Copperberg gate really seems to have stoked some fires there beneath Man City fans. But
it's so weird. I wouldn't mind, but even like De Bruyne was like, what are you even on about? There's no problem.
Exactly.
But Borussia Dortmund fans, you know, that was a literal terrorist attack on their bus and they just got up and it was like, you know, this is horrible, this is awful, but we are going to move on, you know, whereas one Copperberg bottle and it's like, we can't possibly ever play again. This is why we were, why we didn't win the Champions League. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it was an odd one. All right, then. I mean, sort of bringing things to a close then. I mean, what I want to ask you then is obviously we play Chelsea twice, you know, in 4 days now. There's the cup tie on Wednesday night. Are you predicting any changes to that then, based upon what you've told me about Sarri and him keeping the same team then? Surely you can't play the same team for both that game and the weekend's game.
I don't think we're going to take the Carabao Cup very seriously. I don't like that fact, but I don't think we will, no. So I think, yeah, we should be seeing people like Hudson-Odoi, and we should be seeing people like Ampadu. And, you know, if Loftus-Cheek is deemed fit enough, then absolutely Christensen for sure. Rudiger won't play because he can't play, and we have to prioritise him for the weekend. Because, you know, base level, I don't think we will win the Premier League, or, you know, we might win the Europa League, but we have to get top four. There's no two ways about that. We can't spend another season out the top four.
Sure. So all focus on the weekend's game. In terms of the team lineup, in terms of the strength of that team, you're expecting?
Yes, definitely. I don't think we have any other choice because of the way Sarri's decided to set up in the Europa League. We're going to have to not sacrifice the domestic cup competitions, but definitely give the kids and reserves a chance. And, you know, but we've still got people like Barkley and Drinkwater desperate for games. So it's not like, you know, we are scraping the barrel, but it's not a terrible barrel. It's just not a very good barrel.
Yeah. Different qualities of barrels and things like that. All right, then, again, in terms of prediction, then I'll put you on the spot. Then it sounds like you're not as confident as years gone by, basically, based upon sort of the current situation you find yourself in, to the flux of styles and things like that, and the strength that we now have in midfield, maybe in defence. So what would be your prediction for the weekend's game then?
For the weekend, I would give it Liverpool a nice 2-0, if not a 3-1, because we've not just declined, you've got better as well, which is, you know, doubly unfortunate, one might say.
Yeah, for sure. And are you at all boosted by the fact that you've Simon Mignolet will start on Wednesday night?
Not really, because Caballero is going to start, isn't he?
Oh, right.
So,
okay.
Yes. Exactly.
That's going to be... It's going to be an interesting game, that one, I think, for sure. Anyway, Rebecca, thanks so much for all that insight on Chelsea. I mean, there's so much you can sort of burrow down into, especially in terms of the context of the club and the situation it finds itself in. But at least with Sarri, you're going to have, I think, probably quite a lot of fun once things do get in place and he gets his right players and maybe finds the right nicotine gum for him to chew on the sidelines as well.
Oh, it's Morata that'll kill him. 80 a day, but it's Morata that'll send him to his grave.
I'm sure that's going to be some sort of quote that I'll come back to later in the season. But
it probably will.
Yeah. Thank you so much anyway for that, Rebecca. Talking all things Liverpool then, and Sam, I'll just bring you in here then. I mean, it's been a really positive start to the season. Sort of unnerving in a way for things to have gone this well, of course, with that win against Southampton as well. It's the best ever start to a season for a Liverpool manager with 7 wins in a row. That PSG win, of course, and then following up with the win against Southampton at Anfield. Two different types of performances, but you know, the same end result for both of them. What did you make for what was a good week for Liverpool? Great start to the Champions League campaign as well.
It's so good, isn't it, Harry? It's strange, though, how quickly you become accustomed to this kind of thing. It's only 7 games into the season and we're like expecting to win every game all of a sudden. It's bizarre, really. So, you know, we're probably getting a little bit too comfortable with it. I think even some people were annoyed that we didn't win against Southampton by more goals.
Yeah.
Which is just, you know, strange. It's a 3-0 home win. You can't really...
I was going to say, Sam,
perfect.
I'm perfectly happy to get on board with the boring 3-0 home win.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, I've supported this club for 27 years, and this is the most excited I've been for a league campaign, bar none. It's just that little niggling annoyance that is Man City, who are just different gravy as well, that if it wasn't for them, then maybe I'd just be losing my shit completely already. But regards to the week, anyway, you know, that PSG game, I was on the post-match pod with Guy, and it's just so exciting to watch this club at the moment. It's really good to see us, you know, scoring 3 goals against PSG, a team I'd really wanted us to watch, really wanted us to play for a long time now. So we've kind of seen the two styles that Liverpool can adopt all in the space of 1 week. Against PSG, some really exciting attacking football. And, you know, we did what was needed. And then Southampton, on the other hand, then we knew the job was done by half-time. And Klopp kind of made a decision to see it out and make sure we don't concede another goal. And, you know, long may that continue. So many times we've let these leads slip in the last minute or whatever, a free kick or something. Or, you know, we've had a few results this season so far already where we've been 2-0 up and given that goal away, you know, Leicester, Tottenham, and we've had that edgy end to the game. So I just think Klopp was kind of protecting against that and just said, look, it's 3-0. It's in the bag. We'll just take the points and we'll move on to think about Chelsea.
Absolutely. I think that I don't have any issues with those testing out formations. For example, in the first half, I think people have been talking about the 4-2-3-1 that perhaps we saw at stages against Southampton, and with Shaq coming in as well. I have to admit, I was actually expecting Fabinho to get a run. He really is getting the Robertson treatment in terms of a slow sort of introduction into life at Liverpool. And let's face it, that midfield has been performing just fine as well without him so far. So I do look forward to seeing him. I'm sure we'll probably see him tomorrow night for that Carabao Cup game. Just on Shaqiri then, I mean, this is the most we've got to see of him so far in a Liverpool shirt, in a competitive sense anyway. What did you make of his sort of 45-minute cameo then, in terms of the fact that he was obviously substituted afterwards? I just want to ask you what you thought of his performance as a whole and how he fits in the side. And then also what you made of the fact that he was substituted. Do you think that's with an eye on tomorrow's game, or do you think it was more tactical?
Well, Klopp said in his press conference that it was actually a tactical decision and he wasn't happy with the solidity in midfield. But we all know that we can't necessarily trust what Klopp says in a press conference. But for him to come out and say those words, it seems strange for it to be any other reason. You know, I thought Shaqiri was excellent. You know, he's probably the man of the match when it comes to the first half. He's had a hand in all three goals. And one thing he's really brought to this Liverpool squad now, it is excellent set-piece delivery. And I think maybe that's something we've been missing since we sold Coutinho. So you know, he's someone that can really step up a gear with that set-piece delivery. And we had joy from exactly that in the game against Southampton. And the beauty of having someone with that kind of delivery from a set-piece is you can get some really, really cheap goals scored. And it just makes those tough games where you can't get the breakthrough so much easier when you just nick, you know, a corner, you know, a header off a corner or a direct free kick. It's something that Chelsea actually, in the Mourinho days, got down to a T. You know, a John Terry header would often open the scoring for Chelsea. And it's just something that demoralises the opposition really early on. You haven't even had to work for your goals and you're still scoring. So I think, you know, Shaqiri, very good performance by him. He would have been very disappointed to be subbed, but I'd like to think now he'll be getting his start in this game midweek against Chelsea. And, you know, if he has another good performance, you never know, he might have another game on the weekend.
Absolutely. I'd certainly echo what you mentioned about Matip as well. I mean, you mentioned John Terry there. I'm not sure Matip's ever going to be that prolific, but
no.
I think when you see him, having seen him miss so many headers, seen to have a 50p head, when you see him score a header of that nature, you're like, oh, we're definitely going to win this game today if we're scoring those sorts of goals. I mean, against PSG, I mean, I don't want to stay sort of focused on the past too much, Sam. It was obviously a wonderful game to see, and I thought the way in which we performed as well and controlled a game through the controlling of space, which is something we're seeing increasingly. And I think it's something that's taken fans a bit of time to get to grips with, because let's face it, we're so used to seeing teams dominate football and football matches because of their, you know, their ability on the ball, having, you know, a few fantastic playmakers or maybe you know, deep lying playmakers who are able to really dictate the play. But what we're seeing with the current midfield is the work rate and the sheer intensity that they bring to each game is enabling us to really dominate games by dominating the space in general. What did you make of the performance of the midfield? Let's ask it more generally. I mean, what have you made of the performance of the midfield so far this season? The fact that we're not, you know, we're not yet seeing Keita or Fabinho as immediate sort of first team starters, it's testament to just how well Ginny and Milner and Henderson have been playing, surely.
Yeah, I touched on this a bit in the post-match pod after PSG, actually, where I really do think that these new signings, even though they haven't had that big an impact so far, have kind of had that galvanising effect to the existing team and the existing midfielders and kind of got them to up their game, because they know if they're not performing at the absolute top level, they're going to be straight out of this team. And, you know, testament to them, they've really, really upped their game and have performed at levels that I really didn't think they'd be able to. You know, Milner now, the guy is an absolute monster. I don't know how he just runs himself into the ground flat out every single game. Wijnaldum as well, he does a lot of work that maybe some people don't appreciate, and a lot of the time he's branded with this, you know, he doesn't perform away from home and all this. It's something that he's just proving people wrong day by day, and I think we're starting to see that he's understanding more and more by each game exactly what Klopp is expecting of him. And I think that's why he ended up removing Shaqiri in the Southampton game, and he kind of shifted Wijnaldum into that space that Shaqiri maybe wasn't protecting well enough. So it's just testament to the guys that the Klopp's putting so much trust in these guys that he's bought these superstar midfielders and he's still feeling comfortable enough to start with Milner and Wijnaldum. And I just think it's great. You know, I'm desperate to see Fabinho get his full debut, and I'm expecting it now against Chelsea, hopefully. And Keita, again, that guy's going to be an absolute superstar for us. But until they're both up to speed and fully performing exactly how Klopp want them to, why rush them in? You know, we've seen Klopp do it, as you said, with Ox, Robertson in the past. He knows what he's doing. He's making sure that these guys know exactly what they want him to do. And as soon as they are managing to do it in training and he thinks that they're capable, they'll be in the team and they'll be a lot fresher than the other guys. You know, this is very much a squad game now. So very, very happy to see such strength and depth in that midfield area for a change.
Yep, for sure. I think it's something that we've been waiting for a while. So no complaints for me at all. I mean, in terms of the midweek game in the Carabao Cup, then obviously a chance for rotation, obviously a chance for maybe Fabinho to get a fuller debut than that 1 minute, one foul on Neymar that he's had so far. It's a good ratio. It's one I hope he keeps up. Yeah. But I mean, obviously a chance for him, a chance for some other players. Is there anyone in particular you'd like to see sort of come in for that game and you think should get a chance? Even the likes of some youngsters who perhaps could be given a chance on Wednesday night?
I really want to see Sturridge start. I think he's deserved it as well with his performances so far this season. You know, he's picked up a couple of goals already, and I think it's worth noting that both goals were the opening goals in the games. Not his opening goal against West Ham. It was literally his first touch of the game. And against PSG, it was the opening goal of the game. So I think he's deserved his place in the team. So I really, really want to see Sturridge. And I'm sure he'd be happy to score against his old club as well. Another one, obviously Fabinho, I think, really needs some minutes now. I think he's been there long enough. Hopefully he'll get a start and maybe do those 90 fouls in 90 minutes. And that hopefully should stop. I'd like to see Jorginho actually make 180 passes with Fabinho kicking him every minute. I think we might get a bit of rotation either at left back with Moreno or maybe Klein at right back. But, you know, we know from the press conference today that Simon Mignolet will be starting.
What do you make of that? I mean, I'm hesitant to be too negative about anything really at the start of the season, but I have to admit, I mean, seeing him, I don't see what we've got left to learn personally. But
No, I think it's I don't know. You know, goalkeepers don't need resting the same as outfield players, obviously. So personally, I'd play Alisson every single game, but sometimes maybe it's good. Just for the rotation of the club, you know, Mignolet's been there a long time. He's kept quiet. He hasn't kicked up a fuss for a little while now. And he's maybe kind of just given him that little reward for his patience and for being around the club. And you never know, if we do get an injury to Alisson, we'll need him to be coming into the team. So it's a scary prospect. But it's something that you need to always remember, that if we do get a goalie injury, that guy is starting whatever game we have next. So I'm not too worried, really. This is a real opportunity for us to make a dent in this Premier League. So any other competition at the moment, bar the Champions League, I don't really care, if I'm honest. You know, I'd love them to win the Carabao Cup. Don't get me wrong. You know, we're desperate for a trophy. But if playing the strongest team in the Carabao Cup gives us even a 1% reduction in chance of winning the league, then I'm not interested, you know. So if Klopp thinks it's time to rotate, it's time to rotate. But I think we might be surprised just how strong he does go in this game. If his past history is anything to go by, he doesn't like to rotate too heavily. And I think also the fact that it's a home game, it wouldn't do good for our confidence going into the away game against Chelsea, having just lost. So I think Klopp will be really desperate to win the game because it's at Anfield, keep that unbeaten Anfield run going. So I'm expecting a really strong side, but maybe with those couple of changes. Lovren needs games as well now. You know, I'm not his biggest fan, but he's someone as well that it's very much a squad game now. Matip stepped in on the weekend, did a decent job. We need to get Lovren up to the same standard as well now.
Yeah, I was going to mention there with Lovren coming in. I mean, no trepidation around that at all. I mean, it's good to see him getting those minutes following the World Cup as well, of course. Do you think once he gets up to speed and gets more of these minutes that we're going to see more rotation in the Premier League as well?
I seriously doubt it. I think two centre-backs playing together week in, week out, along with the same goalkeeper, has an absolutely massive effect on solidity in the squad. So I can't see Klopp, and he hasn't been that kind of person either, I can't see him just rotating centre-backs just to keep them fresh unnecessarily. You know, it's something that, like with Van Dijk, for instance, now it looks like he's got a bit of a knock on his ribs on the weekend. So I expect him to be fully rested for the midweek game now. So then that's when he'll be doing his rotation. You know, if someone has a small tweak or a small injury that won't keep him up for long, I think that's more likely when he's going to be making his rotation. But if players are fully fit, especially with Gomez's current form, I can't see him rotating Van Dijk and Gomez anytime soon. Doesn't matter if Lovren thinks he's the best centre-back in the world. The way Gomez has started this season, that's now his position to lose.
Yeah, I think that would be my view as well. But it'll be interesting to see what he does for sure, I think. Sometimes perhaps we do forget Gomez's age, but I think it's going to be interesting. But looking ahead to the actual game then, I mean, it's Chelsea week, as I was saying sort of to Rebecca. We were playing twice in just 4 days. What have you seen of them at the start of this season? Of course, you know, speaking to Rebecca earlier on there about a fundamentally different manager in terms of his style of approach on the pitch, one that's clearly pleased a number of Chelsea's players who maybe resented some of the defensive work they've had to do. Although, let's face it, I think that's modern day football. There are very few players who get away with doing nothing defensively anymore. But Sarri is one who does seem to want to let creativity thrive. Possession-based football, high press, very vertical passing, everything going through Jorginho. But have you seen any of Chelsea at the start of the season? They've picked up these results here, perhaps despite not having all the correct players for the positions Sarri wants. So what have you made of them?
Yeah, despite the fact that they made some bizarre signings over the last year, some real sub top six signings, I thought. You've got to remember, they've still got most of the team that did win the league not so long ago. So they're clearly still a really good squad. They just had some seriously toxic feelings within that dressing room and serious problems at the club. So, you know, with Conte leaving, they've had a bit of a fresh start now with Sarri. And not that I expected them to start off quite so well as they have, but I still expected them to be a real threat this season. So, you know, it's not that big a surprise that they are along the top of the league. And with some of the players that they've signed this summer, I think they were always going to improve. Jorginho, as you said, he's someone that they very much like to play through with their, you know, they're going for a really high possession game at the moment now. So I think he's someone that we're obviously going to have to target in the game on the weekend. You know, I've seen the highlights of the game at the weekend against West Ham, and even though they dominated possession and everything, West Ham really did have maybe three gilt-edged chances that they really could have scored some goals from. So despite on paper it looking like an absolute domination and maybe a Liverpool of last season 0-0 draw, West Ham really, really could have nicked that game. So I think there's still weaknesses there to exploit despite their really excellent start. And I think if we can get the win against them on the weekend, we might see a bit of that fragility start to show yet again, and maybe they will fall off a bit. So I just think it's really, when it comes to the midweek game, I want to win the game, but it's not a priority. It's all about Saturday for me. And I think if we really can now, we've had a good couple of results over the last few years at Stamford Bridge, maybe not so much Anfield. So we'll go into the game of the weekend with some confidence. And I, you know, I'd like to think that maybe this will be Keita's chance to really, really shine for the club.
Yeah, of course, 1-2 out of our last three at Stamford Bridge. The game there last year, sort of a strange one, really just didn't have the depth at all to compete properly. I think we were just sort of scrapping for the points towards the end of the last season, weren't we? But in terms of how Sarri plays, we're speaking to Rebecca about how that could potentially play into our hands, really. He's so committed to that approach and that footballing philosophy. And we're obviously a team that thrives on not necessarily always having the ball, but counter-pressing. We've gotten incredibly efficient at it. Do you see him changing anything to tailor for our approach on the weekend? You know, obviously, Kante has been pushed forward so far this season, but surely it would make sense to put him back into midfield for a game like this, no?
Yeah, you'd fully expect Kante to be protecting the defence in that game on the weekend. It's a strange thing with Liverpool, though, because if they do that and get him to sit back, then he's giving more space maybe to us in a deeper position to give maybe Van Dijk and the likes a chance to actually start feeding balls through and make us dominate the game a bit more. So you might fix one thing against this Liverpool side, but then you're leaving another area exposed. So that's really exciting thing about us at the moment is, even if we're not on our game, there's so many other ways we can score at the moment. You know, set pieces now are showing we can nick goals there. We can score the scruffy goals. And our defence has been so good that now we don't feel like we have to score five to actually sit in our seats and be comfortable. So I'm just going into it really confident. And I'm just thinking, you know, absolute worst case scenario, you lose the game, you're still within a point of top. So it's just one of those things. I really expect Liverpool to go out and attack them and just try and see if we can expose some of their weaknesses.
It's going to be an interesting contest, I think, for sure. I mean, one player who we've seen in the past cause us lots of trouble is Eden Hazard, of course. And always seems, when he's on it, it's just incredibly difficult to stop. And he started this season well, of course, did have that quieter game against West Ham, being marked out of it a little bit, is what Rebecca was saying. But, I mean, how do you think we're going to go about managing his threat this time? We saw how he managed Neymar and Mbappe against PSG. Do you think we're going to try a similar tactic in terms of just pressing them or pressing him individually quite intensely?
Yeah, I think that's Liverpool's biggest strength, really, is the way that we defend as a team. We just put so much pressure on players. They don't have a chance to get their head up and actually show what they can do. We saw that with Neymar last week. He really had a tough time of things because whenever he did pass one player, there was another one straight on him straight away. So, you know, I'd expect similar treatment for Hazard on the weekend. I think Liverpool's pressing nature and, you know, maybe players like Milner now. And I'm expecting Keita to be in there, as I said earlier. I think we might really get him to be unleashed now. I feel like Klopp's been holding him back a bit and wants to unleash him on the big game. So I'm fully expecting him to do that against Chelsea on the weekend. And fingers crossed, it's going to be another case of, with Hazard, you've just got to stop the supply. And then if he does get the ball, you literally don't give him an inch. So we've been defending so well recently, even though on the commentary and everything, they keep saying, oh, Liverpool are dodgy on set pieces and, oh, they can't defend and everything. look at us this season. You know, whenever we've taken the lead, we've never looked like losing it in the league. So really, really confident going into the game, mate.
Yeah, certainly sounds it. I think it's good position we find ourselves in, just with the stability that we have in this team and the confidence that's clearly flowing through us as well. So let's hope for a positive result tomorrow night, and then also a positive result on the weekend as well. I think it's a packed schedule for us this month, but let's hope we can sort of get through the next couple of games. I mean, to put you on the spot then, Sam, and actually bring you to predictions then, I mean, what are you expecting then for the weekend's game? What sort of result?
I'm expecting a win. You know, a draw would be a decent result going away to Stamford Bridge.
Yeah. 8 out of 8.
That's but I'm fancying another. Why wouldn't I? You know, whatever happens in midweek, I don't think that'll have any sort of bearing on it. I think we're very much eyes on the game on Saturday. And the way we started at the moment, this team is so, so confident. You know, we've already put Spurs to the sword. They're someone that we've had a lot of problems with over the years. And I just feel like, what's to fear? We've got absolutely nothing to fear. And even if the starting 11 aren't performing, we've now shown that we've got an excellent bench to turn to as well. So I'm not scared of this Chelsea team. Obviously, there are players we need to watch out for, and they are a very, very talented side. But this is not the finished article, Chelsea. You know, they're a very young side, as in learning Sarri's ways, so they haven't had time to gel. This Liverpool team is well drilled, and it's 3 years in the making. So I think we'll step up, we'll go out there with loads of confidence, and we'll put them to the sword.
Sure, perfect then. All right then, just before we go, Sam, did you have anything to plug on your side?
There was just that post PSG pod that I did with Guy. That's the only thing I got out there at the moment, mate. And if anyone wants to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Sambo Evans.
Absolutely. I definitely encourage you to follow Sam. And, of course, make sure you're checking out all the great content on AI Pro. More of the great thoughts of Jan Molby and Sir Kenny Dalglish. It's a real privilege to have those people contributing to the pod in such a wonderful way. And, of course, for such a great cause as well. With the Marina Dalglish Foundation that, of course, the pod's going towards. So, yeah, please be sure to subscribe and listen to all the great content that's coming out. The latest Under Pressure as well, I thought was excellent as well. So, also on Rebecca's behalf as well, check out the Did It Cross the Line pod, of course. She's doing a pod with her better half. Oh, probably shouldn't say that in terms of her husband, Alex, he's a Liverpool fan, she's a Chelsea fan. Sure to be plenty of debate on that, so make sure to check that one out as well. But thank you for listening, guys. It's been a busy week for us with Chelsea week, two games in 4 days. But we'll be back next week to preview the next game, and I hope you've enjoyed. Hope you enjoyed listening. Sports Social Podcast Network.